opinions and are not necessarily those of WWPR Radio, its staff, management, or sponsors. I think this week we'll have four, if I'm not mistaken. I was only having fun. Wasn't hurt.
Are we at war?
Well, Bob, I think there's frankly a kind of tortured debate going on about terminology. What I'm focused on, obviously, is getting done what we need to get done to ISIL. But if people need to find a place to land, in terms of what we did in Iraq, originally this is not a war. This is not combat troops on the ground. It's not hundreds of thousands of people. It's not that kind of mobilization. But in terms of Al-Qaeda, which we have used the word war with, yeah, we went at war with Al-Qaeda and its affiliates.
Good morning. It's time for the Morning Edge here on WWPR 1490 AM. Heard Monday, Wednesday, Friday, 9 AM to 10 AM. I'm Henry Raines. Here's Augie.
Good morning, Tampa Bay. Good morning, Henry. And John Kerry is looking like, I'm not sure what to say, calling Iran as a state sponsor of terror. Certainly makes it more and more difficult to form a coalition of anybody going in and doing anything. But that's what he says, so be it. My issues that I thought were important are looking like we are out of our minds trying to put a coalition together to pretend to do a war, and whatever is being is attempting here. I'm totally confused by this thing, Henry. I'm just absolutely amazed at what going down. I mean, the Islamists basically are more interested in religion than they are government, and they want a government that's subservient to religion. And too much of what's going on in the Middle East is exactly that. And I don't mean one or two countries. I mean the whole shebang. They're all more interested in religion than government. And if you want to make your people subservient to religion and call it government, you've got the makings of the ISIS group all by itself, Henry.
Well, that might be an opportune time to read this comment that was posted on the podcast site, themorningedge.podomatic.com. That's themorningedge.podomatic.com. And we like it not only so that we have your comments to read on the air, but it does help us keep our rankings up there in the top five on the progressive shows on Podomatic. This is from Robert, who has commented a couple different times on the podcast site, and mainly in contrarianism and opposition to you, but I don't know which way this one would go. This is commenting on last Monday's show. It wraps up ISIS and Putin all in the same ball of wax here. The fundamental reason that Putin and ISIS are taking advantage of the world situation is that Obama is weak and doesn't follow through. In other words, Syria. It's all right threatening to take action, but if you don't, you are already the loser. Russia is the largest exporter of oil and gas in the world, and Europe is dependent on it. Ukraine is essential to the progress in Russia in terms of access for its produce, so you will see why Putin is concerned that the Russians remain the major force there. ISIS is a product of the war in Syria against Sunnis versus Shiite. The intention is to control the oil-rich tract to their profit, which looks highly likely since the Iraqi army are about as effective as a hot air balloon. Well, he actually parrots a couple things that you've said before, but I don't know that you've gotten to the same conclusion he did, that it's all Obama's fault because he's weak.
Well, Obama's handling of Syria and stating a red line or line in the sand or whatever has put him in a bad spot, but this whole situation is a bad spot. And Iraq has no military of any consequence, so trying to get people to come in and act for Iraq in that mess is the problem. But when your Secretary of State comes out and basically calls the government of Iran a terror state, when they probably are the one entity put the thing back together again, put yourself over on the other side of the argument. We're about to have a deal over nuclear and some other things and sanctions and so on. I'm sorry, but this man should step aside as Secretary of State. This is a joke, and he's a joke. But Obama's decision making is one that's been questioned in the case of the 200,000 or so dead in Syria over the bombings and the million or so that have gone into refugee camps and so on.
Augie, I need to stop you for a second. There's something strange going on with your audio. It was a little hollow there at first. Of course, you're Skyping in from a distant location, if anybody couldn't tell that. We're getting some other audio bleeding in there. Is there other, are you in a situation where there are other people are talking or there's a background noise?
There really isn't anything here. No.
And your audio goes from sounding hollow to sounding very clear, too.
Unless it's about placing the phone and directing my voice, maybe if I do, is that better when I direct my voice that way? Or
It's sort of in the middle of what we were just talking about. We'll just go on. I'll let you know if it gets to be too much of a problem. Sure. Let's go ahead and take a moment now. There's lots to talk about on that issue and many more. And one of the things is, will Congress vote on the authorization of new force for the President Obama, or will he continue to try and justify it from the old resolution back in 2002 for George W. Bush? And if you were in Congress, you'd be facing that vote. So it might be an opportune time for us to introduce our guest in studio. It is Joe Newman. He is write-in congressional candidate, District 16, currently held by Congressman Vern Buchanan. No stranger to the studio of WWPR, 1490 AM, over the last couple years at least, if not more. And he is here in the studio. Good morning, Joe.
Good morning, Henry. Good to be with you again.
Yeah, and he's also joined in the studio with Terry, who is also a frequent voice on the radio here. Good morning, Terry.
Good morning, Henry. Good morning, Augie. Good to hear both
of
you again.
Good morning, Terry. Glad that both of you guys are there. This whole situation is of America flirting with a war, and Germany wants to pull away. They want to provide materials to somebody else to do the hard stuff, and it's going to require the Arabs to come up and do the job. I just think this whole thing smacks of people really not seeing things for what they are. This whole ISIS thing is being directed by, as I've said before many times on the show, that it's being directed by the former generals of Saddam Hussein, and they were Sunni secularists. They're not religionists. And so you don't have this sectarian thing in the real guise. The people that they're employing to do the dirty work to scare the hell out of everybody and collect all the monies to gain the land are being used right now. But at the time of Saddam, what the great leader Saddam Hussein would do is they cut their heads off. Their heads would be going the minute they get to a certain point of power. And I that's where I think this is headed. And if any kind of alliance happens between sectarians, I'm getting my terms mixed together here, but they're basically non-religious Sunnis.
Augie has sex on his mind.
Not the people out in the field.
Joe, your assessment of the situation.
I always love to argue with Augie, but I can't help but relate this to everybody trying to play the game from the stands, telling the coach which play he ought to call, who he ought to send in, and what position they ought to take. There's a hell of a lot going on, Augie, that we don't know about.
By the way, why go to the game if you're not going to do that?
Well, that's right. But then I think this is a little bit more important than just who's going to, have more points on the scoreboard. And I have fun trying to relate this, not to you, Augie, but to the whole situation where people are yelling about big government and all that, but they want Uncle Sam to be big enough to stand here and put his feet over there and put out the, and stamp out the insects and the, and everything else all over the world. And I want to be a little bit more cautious. I'm not an isolationist. But this is too big a game to let everybody out there in the field saying you ought to do this and you ought to do that. And I think we have to have a little bit more patience. We got problems over there. We've got a lot of problems everywhere. I just don't. We made a mistake going into Iraq. We agree on that. And I think that's the thing that originated the problems. And I think we ought to be careful how we look. ISIS is something to be feared. But let's not try to divide the world so that we have China saying, well, wait a minute, you're invading my territory. Or Russia say, you're getting too close to me. I'm in favor of just standing outside and looking as hard as I can and try to put the pieces together and figure out which in the long run is going to be the best move to make.
And before, Augie, before you jump back in, I just want to also point out to Joe Newman, congressional candidate, right in District 16, 101 years old. I guess that has to be your tagline these days when you're running for Congress. But it's fine for you to say that the people in the stand shouldn't say, but you're running for Congress. You have to say that. So I can't let you hide behind that comment. Augie, go ahead. I'm sure Joe will have more to say to you.
Yeah. We can be all cerebral all day long, and Obama maybe should have gone into Syria. My friend Robert, who tries to nail that onto, and others who have done the same thing with Obama over the red line and so forth. But the point is, this decision is one that is fraught with danger, but you, at the same time, the willingness to go forward on this thing requires an understanding of who is going to play the final card. Robert has said that that Russia is the greatest supplier of oil and natural gas, which is not true, but maybe to Germany and to Europe, but not to the world. In any event, the oil situation, natural gas situation, frankly, the cards are in our favor, and the export ban prevents us from flooding the market and dropping the price of oil overnight, which some people have alleged. But as far as what to do here and playing the game, when you are playing a sports event, you have to know how to play defense and you have to know how to play offense. And there's a time to run the offense and there's a time to exhibit the ability to stop something. Right now, we're talking about this defending against a roller coaster of a group called ISIL or ISIS, depending which way you want to define. America goes, but you don't have Turkey in here because Turkey's afraid to lose the 40 or 50 people.
Well, Augie, I know you've said that, and that's what the New York Times had, but what really is at risk here, goes right back to the two generals that you were talking about, and we ought to take Robert up on his comment on this and remind him what has been said on the Morning Edge numerous times in the last several weeks, and that is, first of all, that Turkey does have those diplomats, but they are the ones that are the elite in that country. The generals in that country are the ones that are prospering from the smuggled oil that the Islamic State is sending out through Turkey. That's why they won't join President Obama on this. They're tied into it. They were trying to make Syria a client state just for that reason. And that red line that Obama says, he backed off from it because reporting by Seymour Hersh, the Pulitzer Prize winner, and others around the world that got plenty of circulation in Europe and Asia, is that Turkey and its proxies were the ones behind that gas attack. And when they analyzed the signatures of the chemical weapons, it was not what President Assad had in Syria. It was them. So, yeah, they have their diplomats there, but there's plenty of reasons why Turkey is playing this game.
They're using the diplomats as an excuse, a humanitarian excuse. And what you're saying is absolutely right. The cards, when it becomes quite clear that Turkey's got a financial card in this thing, it's going to make them look pretty pathetic, and it's going to make it harder for them to recover those people if they actually care about them in the end.
And let's also, just while we're on this topic of what really is at stake here, which the president didn't say, which there is either an inability to articulate it here in the U.S. or a willingness to not tell the American people the truth. I didn't hear him say anything about controlling the Tigris and the Euphrates, one of the biggest sources, one of the most important sources of water in the Middle East. I didn't hear him talk about preventing ISIS from extending influence into the Sinai and control of the Suez Canal. I didn't hear him talk about the oil fields in the east of Saudi Arabia and the importance of the Persian Gulf or the Red Sea and the Gulf of, and the Aden and the control of that area. We're not talking about what the real wealth and power that is being fought over is for. We're talking about some guys that got beheaded, and that's horrible, but really what difference does it make in the operation of how the world works?
What makes you think, Henry, that because he didn't say anything about it, that they don't have knowledge of that?
I didn't say that. I said the possible inability or the willingness to not tell the people.
I think we're making assumptions then. That if we're suggesting that we know all about that, but that the president and his staff doesn't.
No. So, well, this, excuse me, let me interject. Henry, I agree with you entirely. If you have infrastructure out there that is crucial and places that can shut things down and gain power, the fear of the dam being blown up on Mosul and so forth are all crucial things. But just like when the Wild West was tamed many, many years ago in the U.S., we set up fortress spots to control area against other areas. And that's probably the tactic that needs to happen in this situation. You protect the dams, you set up fortress situations, and you dissuade these people from doing the damage that they could do.
I hate to make these stupid analogies, but then it's like calling your big brother in to take over your fight. Sooner or later, those people over there are going to have to realize that this happens to be their fight, too. And I think the best defense is trying to get the people over there to be getting involved in this battle. Because what I'm hearing is, let's us go in and take care of Ukraine. Let's us go in and take care of
Syria. I hate to be your little brother.
Let's us go take care of that. You know, all these little kids out there, our family out there is calling on Big Brother Uncle Sam. Hey, come in and fight my fight for me. And the best defense to me and the best offense is try to develop the area to where it's going to help take care of itself.
We have a caller on the line, and you can join the conversation at 941-745-1490. And I just want to quickly say that I was listening to some panel on Diane Rehm's show on NPR, and then they had the typical talking head point of view. And then one guy said, "Who the plan that makes the most sense of all is buy them off. They've been bought off from the Saudis. They've been bought off from us. They've been bought off from Turkey. They're sellable. Buy them off." Ken, what's on the mind?
Hey, good morning, guys.
Morning.
Hey, good morning, Joe. Can you hear me?
Good morning. I was just swallowing a drink.
All right.
And not a hard drink either. Don't get it wrong.
I wanted to ask a question about the red line in Syria and how the president looks weak. I'm wondering... Congress is back in town. How weak does it make the United States look that we have a feckless Congress, a Congress that's unwilling to take a vote on unity in terms of where this country stands regarding ISIS, in terms of backing some funding for the president's plan to go ahead and fight this group? They're unwilling to take any of those important votes, yet they stand on the law on the sidelines and kibitz. So how weak does that make us? And just to support that statement, we have House Speaker John Boehner came back from summer vacation, and he says about the president. And this is a quote: "He finally began to make the case that the nation needed him to make for quite some time." And he says, "Destroying this terrorist threat requires decisive action and must be the highest priority for the United States and other nations of the free world," says Boehner. And you know, what vote they took when they came back from their summer vacation. They took another vote, the 51st vote, to dismantle the Affordable Care Act. So we truly do have a feckless Congress. How weak does that make America look? I'll hang up and listen.
You might also add that Boehner also wants to sue the president for taking too much power by himself. And that goes along with just what you're saying. We've got a Congress that's willing to they do a beautiful job of being critical. They aren't doing a hell of a lot about solving anything. And I'm with you.
You're listening to the voice of Joe Newman, write-in congressional candidate, District 16, against incumbent Vern Buchanan. The websites of interest, joenewman101.com, N-E-W-M-A-N, joenewman101, the numerals.com. And if you hadn't heard, he is 101 years old and running for Congress here in the south side of Tampa Bay. He's on Facebook also, facebook.com/joenewman101 and twitter.com/joenewman101, which I guess the social media people just say at joenewman101. And Augie is very distantly connected to us via Skype. And I will now withdraw and go back, let Augie pick up where he left off.
Well, this thing is, we're in the beginning phases of creating a coalition, and the only ones, as was mentioned before, we're going to be effective in this, are those willing to go against fellow Islams. And it's been fairly clear that Islam is something that can be used and go in any direction, as all religions can be done that way. And if it's for gaining power through religion, this is what happens in each of these countries in different levels. Unlike, whether it's the Islamists can live in peace and harmony with one another, in the Middle East you have Sunnis and Sunni who finance wars and finance 911 against us and save our friend. You have all variety of mischievous people using the religion one against the other. You have the ISIS going in and telling the southern half of Iraq, which is Shia, that if they don't become Sunni, they're going to be killed. And they've even said one third will die, one third will convert, and one third will, I'm not sure what the other third is going to happen to them, but they've been just essentially operating as a terrorist group and stealing money along the way. So until we put these people in the right context with the right coalition, and John Kerry is not the guy that's going to get this done in an effective way. I'm very, very disappointed in what I've seen so far. But this whole business is relying upon a chaotic region that has no ability to get along. And, the West is historically created the divisions as it did originally in 48. In Iraq that have left people separated by, I'm not sure what, a line here, a line there, and pretty soon you have chaos happening every so often, and this is what's been going on ever since. And then oil has been the only glue that's held these people together, and that's starting to dissolve and go away.
Augie, I don't want to interrupt you, but Terry's here in the studio with us. Terry was his teacher. Terry, how much success do we have going into the playground, taking all these kids that are fighting with each other and separating them and make them now play nice?
Well, you can stop for a while, but they're going to be right back at it again. But I was thinking about a class that I taught this past week, and it defined what Levant is. Levant starts roughly in the middle of the Sinai Peninsula, sweeps past Israel, encompasses all of Saudi Arabia, Qatar, Yemen, all the way up through United Arab Emirates, Syria, all the way up through Anatolia, which is Turkey. And if that's
all
they
want...
Pardon?
And parts of Egypt, I believe.
And parts of Egypt also. So my thinking is that's their conflict. If the Levant is encompassing all these countries and that's all ISIL wants, these folks have got to step up. But I don't think Saudi Arabia wants to equip that many soldiers because they'll turn the guns back on the royal family.
Well, that's exactly right, Terry. And that's the point. When we know that 911 was
bought and paid for by our friends, the Saudis. And then we went to war against adjacent countries instead of against Saudi Arabia because the oil tap could get shut off on it. That's a very, very interesting political decision that this country made with a different leadership. And when people criticize Obama for weighing the circumstances of what you just cited, I think there's something wrong with the criticism.
Well, Augie, we need to go to a break. On the other side of the break, we will continue the conversation with Joe Newman, congressional write-in candidate, District 16, get an update on the campaign and much, much more. You're listening to The Morning Edge.
This part of The Morning Edge is brought to you by Collins, Little, and Delgado, practicing personal injury, criminal defense, and family law. Call 941-749-1446. 941-749-1446.
I may be crazy, but it just may be a lunatic you're looking for. Turn out the light.
This part of the...
Talks with the animals.
Sarasota is home to a true gift, the Posture Clinic of Sarasota, with Dr. Mark D'Amato, 4450 South Tamiami Trail. Dr. D'Amato is a veterinary chiropractor, treating horses, dogs, or your favorite four-legged friend. First and foremost, animal chiropractic care is not intended to replace traditional veterinary medicine. Complementary care is a type of care that works with your vet, and certainly not instead of them. To find out more information, call Dr. Mark D'Amato at 941-927-7009. That's 941-927-7009. Oh, and by the way, Dr. Mark treats two-legged patients, too.
Nothing says I love you, I'm thinking about you, or I miss you, like a beautiful bouquet of fresh flowers from ProFlowers.com. Flowers are a festive way to dress up a birthday, holiday, or anniversary. Plus, prices start at $19.99 and include a free vase. Every bouquet is guaranteed to last at least 7 days. To send a thoughtful bouquet, go to ProFlowers.com/radio. And to receive this special offer, enter code SUNSHINE. That's ProFlowers.com/radio, code SUNSHINE.
Sharpen your edge. Call The Morning Edge with your comments at 941-745-1490. That's 941-745-1490. You can find your Morning Edge any time of the day on demand at themorningedge.podomatic.com.
It's The Morning Edge here on WWPR, 1490 AM, live in the studio. Congressional candidate, write-in candidate for District 16, Joe Newman, 101 years old and counting. And he is spoken for and represented on the websites JoeNewman101.com, on Facebook.com/JoeNewman101, and on Twitter at JoeNewman101. Augie is Skyping in from a distant location, and we said we would get to the campaign before we finish the show, so looking at the clock, and I need to remind Augie that this is the day my new schedule starts, so we have to end on time. And then, Augie, if just to indulge me for a moment, before we really get into the nuts and bolts of the campaign, I wanted to say that Joe has been very gracious to the other candidates and keeping the high road in the campaign, not making an issue of their youth and inexperience. But I do want to speak to him about one thing as far as his life experience before we get into the campaign. Because I don't know if you noticed, Augie, but there's a big new Ken Burns documentary about the Roosevelts, Theodore Roosevelt, Franklin Roosevelt. But, Joe, by my calculations, the 1932 election that brought Franklin Roosevelt to power, you either were just about ready to vote or you might have voted in it. What is your recollection of that election?
I recollect voting in that election.
Just once?
Asking Joe.
There was a great fear of Hoover. And if you go back to that time, it's not only we have to take into consideration the attitude and the feelings of the people, that we were in a depression. And if there was ever a threat to this country of overthrow or anything else. That was the time, because there were no jobs. Unemployment was double what it was at the height of the recent depression that we're just coming out of. And I remember that I just got out of high school, and brother was fighting brother for a job. If you heard there was something, you raced your cousin down to see who could be the first one there to apply for it. And there was a lot of tough feelings. And that was my first vote for FDR.
What state were you in?
I'm sorry?
What state were you in?
Indiana.
Okay.
Of course, Indiana didn't make any difference who you voted for. It's been Republican all the time. But at least that was the time when a lot of people went out. And I can remember very deeply how much it affected the people. We had a grocery store, if you give me a couple of minutes. We had a grocery store, and we were delivering food to people because
Before you tell us that, tell us who your parents were. How they got here.
My parents came from Russia. Both of them, my father and mother, had been sent to Siberia by the Tsar because they were protesting there. And I have to make the comment, and when I tell that to people, the first thing you think of, they must have been Marxists or communists. People forget that people over in Europe, and they were also reading about Washington and Jefferson. So many of the revolutions started were not because of Marx, but because of they read about Jefferson and Washington. But to get back to FDR, I can remember distinctly the difference that happened when the WPA came in, and people went to were given jobs and had money that they could go out and spend. Before that, the attitude of people in every neighborhood was pretty rough. We're pretty bitter, and we don't realize that FDR came in. Now we all have to agree that FDR saved the capitalist system. He saved the market system by closing the banks and protecting the banks and all that, similar to what was happening.
I might agree with you, but we don't all have to agree. Because I see Fox News, they don't agree with you.
Well, unfortunately, there is a Fox News. But who else would we have to kick around if it wasn't for Fox News being there to be able to criticize? We have to have somebody to point out the bad side.
There must have been anti-Roosevelt feelings and commentary in the media back then. What was the other side saying about Roosevelt?
Well, no, you just raised an issue that I can talk upon about my own experiences. I worked for the Social Security Administration. My job was to go out in the field in Indiana and where I was assigned, and go out and explain Social Security and talk to them. And the Republicans objected to that, and thinking that Social Security was a bad thing and an invasion of people's privacy. So
were you aware of the attempted coup against FDR? At that period of time, were you aware? Did it make the media? It was in the New York Times. Did it make it to you?
Oh, of course. They would do anything they could to destroy FDR.
But with General Smedley Butler and all, do you remember? Was that story circulated when you were there?
Okay. Yes. And so you have to have lived through it, as many of us did, through that period of when the people were feeling left outside and nothing, no concern for them. And that's one of the reasons why I take this sort of quieting attitude towards our foreign problems right now. We do have a lot of domestic problems that we are not looking into that need to be cared for. And sometimes I wonder if the Republican administration or the Tea Parties aren't using a lot of this as a diversion tactic to keep us from being concerned about what's going on.
We have a caller on the line. Good morning, Wade.
Good morning, and good morning, Joe and Terry and all of you. Listen, I just wanted to say, Joe, that I'm sure you remember that at a certain moment in history, the voting age for people was reduced from 21 to 18. That allowed me, who was 18 by then, to cast my first vote in an election for Roosevelt. And not too many people around that can say that. You and I can. But I wanted you to know that and how pleased I am to hear you on the radio and getting the perspectives that all of you have there. And I appreciate it very much. The other thing is that on the question of you know, the Middle East and all of that, it's been going on so very long. And if you think back, it seems like it never ends. It just pauses for a while, and then it moves on again. And I have a feeling that that pattern is just going to continue. I don't know what you can do about it. But I do appreciate the perspective coming from you guys and your program and your guests there. Thanks very much, and I'll hang up and listen.
Thank you. Open phone lines 941-745-1490, 941-745-1490. Augie, go ahead, please.
Yeah, you know, the problem that the Democrats had at that time was that the South essentially had the conservatives, we call the Dixiecrats. And in order to keep the party together, Roosevelt, Franklin, had to make deals left and right. The poverty in the South was immense. And the situation of unemployment was less of a problem in the South, ironically, because it was rural, than it was in the big cities. Hoover Dam had already been started as a public works project and was in process, but it wasn't beginning to touch the people and taking people off the streets. The WPA, all those things, all those works projects and so forth, that came into play by a four-term president ultimately dying at the time of World War II when we had no 22nd Amendment, allowed a president the kind of power and latitude to run his party, to run the country. We have a two-term presidency today that really restricts the president to 6 years of effective office. And so office in those times was, I think, easier were all the problems than they are now. Roosevelt was called a communist. He supported the unions. He supported Social Security. He supported the thing that brought the people back. And it took, you know, it took riots against the unions. It took a lot of upset. But he got the Rural Electrification Act in place. He had Social Security in place. Lots of public issues that took the burden off of people and gave them a chance to survive through the worst economic times. And of course, the Republicans did not want to go to war against the Germans. They fought the issue of what was happening at that time, the fear of Hitler and the powerful German army. So you had the conservatives in those days resisting any attempt to protect the people of Europe, big consumers of American products and trade. Not like it is today, not nearly at that high level, but a situation that people knew would grow. And, of course, World War II put everybody to work, and when it came out to an end, we had a greater debt than we ever had, which was then wiped away by infrastructure growth after World War II was over. So you have Roosevelt, who was hated by many, and who had his wife had to set up a situation where the great singer, I'm trying to think of her name right now, was prevented by the American public from singing in Carnegie Hall. She was allowed to sing on the Lincoln Memorial. So lots of things for the public at a time when film, all these things came into play for the public to know what was happening with their government. The awareness of government was so, so important at that time.
I need to call time on that discussion because we only have about 10 minutes left, and we promised the audience we'd get an update on the campaign. Of course, Joe Newman, 101-year-old write-in congressional candidate, District 16. Joe, what is the state of the campaign?
Well, what I would say about the campaign is we're doing what we wanted to do. There was no use being active prior to the primary because there was the vote for the congressional district wasn't even on the ballot. And now that it would only be confusing, as far as we're concerned, to say write in Joe Newman when there was nothing to write that name in for.
As a write-in candidate, have you declared a party affiliation or?
No, we haven't declared party affiliation. Part of that is because of the structure of getting into the elective process is that then you would have to come up and make a big deposit with the state if you're with a party, and that as a write-in candidate, I can do that and not have to ask.
So are you no party affiliation?
No party affiliation. I'm a write-in candidate. I'm interested in the what the problem is and the way to resolve the problem, and I want to be able to pick from any area what I think is a better solution to the problem that we are facing. In other words, I have criticisms of the Democrats in how they are approaching certain areas. As much, not as much, but in a similar way to you have to the Republicans or anyone else. I think we have to look at the at the problems we have to that face us as far as education and all that, and then come up with it. And let me give you an example. Both the Democrats and Republicans for the last 10 or 15 years have been saying we have to do something about Social Security to secure it. We have to do something about Medicare. And you'll get that same questionnaire this year and next year. Social Security is threatened, or Medicare is threatened. And these minds that are putting out these statements, raising the questions, don't seem to be taking much time but coming up with a resolution to the issue. And I would and I feel that I would like to sit down and say, okay, what is our problem with Social Security, if there is a problem? Then how do we resolve it? What is the problem? And in every case, people, it's funding that is the problem. And same thing with Medicare. We're not sitting down and saying, let's resolve that problem. We can argue about education. We don't sit down, or some people are, but then the great majority of people aren't sitting down and saying, what is the resolution? What is the how do we solve this problem? Meanwhile, the problem goes on, and it gets worse. And so my position is, it isn't so much of taking a party platform. It's taking and looking at what are people. I raise the issue of, not raise the issue, I ask the question of everybody when I go to talk before them. If you had to rate our country and based upon what it is doing, what would be your, what would you use to rate it against the amount of wealth there is, or the amount of how high our buildings are, or how big our army is, or would you rate it based upon what it's doing for the people that are here? And that's what I'm trying to do.
I have much to jump on there, Augie, but you go first.
Well, when you value the people first, the costs are a solution or not, as the case may be. And there are solutions that are about situations, and some of these things are tempest in a teapot, really no problem, but problems that are artificiated. In fact, the inflation bugaboo that Rick Santelli tried to scare the hell out of people a few years ago predicted that we were over-printing money, and therefore inflation was going to crash down on us like a ton of bricks. Proved to be wrong. Paul Ryan doing the same thing. This is an editorial by Krugman just that I was going to quote from, but essentially creating fear in the people, panicking people about the future, telling young people, well, you're not going to have any Social Security when the time comes. Well, there's so many simple solutions to Social Security dilemmas, which always melt away in the face of serious people looking at the problem. And one of them is take the cap off, make every dollar taxable in the same way, and not the higher dollars exempt, which is what we've done. After $100,000 of earnings, those dollars you make above that are exempt. A lot of people don't realize $107,000 is what it is right now. Just one example of what can be done for Social Security. Medicare is already demonstrating that it's proving to be a pretty efficient system, and actually there's a gain in the monies that have been saved, and a lot of that's attributed to the Affordable Care Act, ACA. So these fear tactics, They're not about solving problems. They're about creating panic and fear in the helpless and the young and in the ignorant. And that's what we've got going on by the conservative side of the spectrum. The Tea Party is a scare party.
You see it in the pictures of the people sitting in the audience of the Tea Party with a sign on their chest, don't touch my Social Security, don't touch my Medicare, big government is too big. Now, what the hell is that? But anyway, that's what I come up.
Let me bring us back to the topic of the campaign. You said that you're doing what you wanted to do, and so what is that?
I'm sorry.
You said the campaign is right where you wanted it to be. You're doing what you wanted to do, and not what the we don't have time to go into the issues that you talked about before. What is it that you're doing right now?
What we want to do is be heard. We want people to be.
So where are people hearing you?
Well, we're beginning to. I'm here today, and I'm going to have interviews. I'm talking to a high school group a week from Friday, and the idea is to get as many opportunities to discuss with people the situation. You have to, I don't have to tell you this, Henry. You know that the job I'm running for is one of a representative. And representative means I have to represent what you think, Terry thinks and everything else, and combine them and then weigh them and decide what I think is best. And so the best way to do that is to do what I'm doing at this moment, sitting down and talking to people, hoping they'll call in and saying you're wrong on this or you're right on this. And then so that we can determine where does this country want to go and what does it want to do? Where does it want to spend its money? And where do we want to get this money?
I want to get this caller in at the last minute, but I want to follow up on that. Caller, you're live on the air. Go ahead. Quickly, please.
Good morning.
Quickly.
Your guest, what is his name?
Joe Newman.
Joe, have you been endorsed by Mitch Mallett?
All right. That was well worth it. Okay. Now, you said you were very explicit about what you're doing right now, but if people can go back on to the morningedge.podomatic.com and to the March period of time on those shows. And I had spoken to you off the air. Augie spoke to you on the air. When you were a worldwide story, when you had the soapbox of all the media around the world, we said you needed to get your name on the ballot as a no-party affiliate, and then you could not be shut out of debates. You would be taken seriously instead of a novelty campaign. I looked at your website. I looked on Facebook. The appearances had dried up within a few weeks after that. Why didn't you get your name on the ballot?
Well, I think I told you the name on the ballot. The name on the ballot, we had a meeting of the people that are working with me, and we went over that. To get our name on the ballot would be sending people out to get roughly 3,000 petitions, a little bit less than that, or come up with $10,000. And we decided we didn't want to do that. The odds, we have to be frank about it, the odds of winning in this area are a little bit...
That isn't what you're changing the subject. We're talking about on the ballot and what the benefits of being on the ballot would have been.
That's your opinion. Our opinion was different. Our opinion was to do it.
But our opinion has proved right because the media appearances dried up for you. You had the momentum and everything to get that many people. You talk about getting people involved. You had only needed 4,800 petitions, 100 people getting 48 petitions.
Well, you may be right. You know, it may be end up in the industry right. We were wrong. That we made the wrong decision. Our decision was to do what we were doing.
So are you going to do it right in 2016?
In 2016?
Yes. Are you going to follow our advice and do it correctly? I don't think you'll have the media presence that you did.
I'm willing to do it. Running a campaign is not really a one-man person. A one-man job.
You had people all around the world that wanted to help you.
You know, you may be right because I had the reception from the national press and everything else is much better than it has been from the local press, really. I don't know why, and I haven't even tried to find out why. But then maybe next time we'll take your advice. But at least what we are doing now is we're asking for as many audiences as we can get to talk to as many people to discuss it. You know, it's interesting, Henry. You contact and people say we would like to come out and discuss your issues with you or what we think are your issues, but they don't want to talk religion or politics, and I think this is one of the big problems that that I'm facing now is after A meeting is over and they sit around the table and talk, fine, we're having a lot of fun talking about the issues. And I am getting a lot of support. We haven't asked for money, but people have offered it. So you may be right. You and Augie may be right. Maybe I took the wrong move. Maybe we should have got on the ballot. But we're going to play it the way we're playing it now and go on with it. And anybody out there that wants somebody to come out, wants us to come out and discuss with them, I'm very happy to do that.
Augie, you've got about a minute to wrap up here.
Well, I was very pleased that Joe got the attention he got. And to me, it was a hugely missed opportunity. I know that some people thought it was going to be more work than I think it was, actually, from what I talked to people involved in that kind of activity. And just getting yourself on the ballot in a formal way, I would have demonstrated a real faith and a seriousness that I think is somewhat missing, but I don't want to be overly critical.
All right, so I guess we'll have to wait till 2016 when they have to put you on the debates, when they have to put you on the dais.
Well, you know that Buchanan's not going to debate anybody.
They can have you out there with the Democratic calendar.
I was with Henry. I was with Henry Lawrence Saturday.
Who?
Henry. I don't think Henry Lawrence. He happens to be the gentleman that is running on a Democratic ticket, and he suggested that we have lunch together. So he and I are going to get together.
So there is a free lunch.
And I don't know whether that has to be, there's something about the sunshine law that says that we shouldn't do that. But anyhow, we're going to do it. And maybe he and I can arrange to have some debates. And maybe you can have the two of us on and we can sit down there and discuss that way. Because, you see, if we got in the debate, we got on it, it probably would be only Henry and I would be on there anyhow.
And then still be forced to cover you. Augie, we want to remind people, Dave Miner in the studio on Wednesday. Dave Miner, Manatee County School Board member. We'll be talking about the very controversial contract of putting armed officers into the school districts, in the elementary schools, and basically what he calls rent-a-cops. They'll also talk about the latest budget for the Manatee County School District, so I know you'll be looking forward to that.
Absolutely.
All right, Augie, we'll be back on Wednesday with another Morning Edge.
...have fled their Iraqi homes because of the brutal violence of ISIS terrorists. Many of these families are living in hot, dire conditions with little food, water, or shelter. International...